Welcome to Deep Dive from the Japan Times. I'm Sean McKenna. When it comes to cherry blossom or sakura season in Japan, timing is everything. On Saturday, Kochi became the first prefecture in the country to see the blossoms. They were on a Somei Yoshino cherry tree at Kochi Castle. No such luck in Tokyo, where it was cold and rainy. Today, we're going to revisit some stories about Japan's love of sakura, and we're going to start with my colleagues Alyssa I. Smith and Tu Hung Ha, discussing this obsession with figuring out when the blossoms are going to bloom, a feat that's getting more difficult due to climate change.
Hey, Tu.
Hey, Alyssa.
The last time we were on the pod together, we talked about culture trends and highlights in 2022. You also recently spoke to Jason about the evolution of Yayoi Kusama. Now, you're taking a little detour, and you've written a piece about sakura forecasting. What piqued your interest in this subject?
Well, first of all, great point, Alyssa. I'm not a science reporter. I'm not here in a capacity of being a climate change expert. Mm-hmm. But I have always been interested, since I moved to Japan, in the sakura forecast, because I think it is kind of a unique part of culture here. And I was really curious, like, you know, I would see these lists of like, this park is 40% full, but the park next to it is 60% full. And I was like, who is recording this? Is it just like a guy? You know, how I pictured it was a guy with white gloves and a magnifying glass every day going out and checking the difference in the diameter of these flowers.
Mm-hmm. I imagine it's a pretty big responsibility to sort of kick off the party season for all of Japan.
Yes. I actually got to witness a sakura press conference.
Was it what you imagined it would be?
Yeah. In that, I was looking at a wall of shoulders.
Uh-huh. You start your piece standing in front of a very special tree in Tokyo. And I didn't know about the existence of this tree. So can you give us a little bit more information about why this tree is so special?
Yes, there is a tree actually very close to where we're sitting right now in Tokyo at Yasukuni Shrine. It is a sakura tree that has been designated by the government as the sample tree that is used for the prefecture of Tokyo. So mm-hmm. The Japan Meteorological Agency sets the standard for observing sakura trees, obviously. And there's a list of 58 of these trees in the country, all across the country. And there are rules about the flowering of these trees. So on the day that I went, there was somebody from the agency, a meteorologist.
Was he wearing white gloves?
I don't think so, but he was very nervous because he's not a, you know, he's not a public speaker. He's mm-hmm. He probably just looks at charts all day. But it was his job that day. So what he's looking for in order to declare the first day, like the opening of the trees, is for 5 to 6 flowers to be open on the tree. And they have to be on the branches, not on the trunk and not on the roots.
I see. Can you explain a little bit of the science behind sakura blossoming? For example, what are the main factors in when they bloom and how they bloom?
Sure. So the basic biorhythm is that in summer, the trees form the flower buds. In late fall and early winter, they go into dormancy. At some point in deep winter, they wake up from the dormancy. And then when spring comes, they flower. So that's the basic flow.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like cold is just as important as warmth to these trees.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we do think of the warmth of spring as the thing that wakes up the buds and causes them to flower. But just as important is the cold temperatures in winter that actually signal to the tree that they need to wake up from dormancy.
Mm-hmm. Now, with climate change making the weather more unpredictable, it's also becoming difficult to forecast when the sakura bloom, right? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, exactly. So there's two main ways in which the bloom is being affected by climate change. So they're both related to temperature. So the first is that the flowering dates will get earlier, and they have been getting earlier. This year's flowering date was the earliest on record, along with 2021 and 2020, going back to when the record started in the 1950s. And also, what researchers have found is that if the winter in places like Kyushu, which is the warmest part of Japan, just like doesn't get cold enough, you might see some kind of half-bloom trees, like looking kind of weird, or in the worst case scenario, they might not bloom at all.
Right. And I'm sure that's going to be very heartbreaking for the people in Kyushu who won't be able to party under the beautiful sakura blossoms.
They'll just be taking selfies with bare trees. They won't know what to do. They won't know what day it is.
Some people may not know this, but one of the reasons the sakura tend to bloom all at the same time is because over 90% of the cherry trees planted in Japan are clones. They're not just the same species, they're clones of the same tree, right?
That's right. That's the Somei Yoshino variety. And actually, the rules I mentioned earlier set by the meteorological agency dictate that, for the most part, they only use this variety to do the observations because the trees are so consistent genetically. So, right, they were actually all bred, allegedly by the same gardener during the Edo period, and then they were spread all over Japan. But there's actually hundreds of different varieties of cherry trees naturally in Japan, with different colors to their petals, you know, when they bloom and for how long. And there's actually a sakura expert named Hideaki Tanaka out in Ibaraki Prefecture who's growing 1,000 sambal trees of 400 different varieties. And he's trying to convince local governments to plant other species.
Why would they want to do that?
Well, aside from, you know, a more diverse array of beauty, there's some problems, I think, with the Somei Yoshino strain. So they are hard to prune, from what I understand. And so they are left vulnerable to an infection called witch's broom that can harm the trees. And because this is the vast majority of the cherry trees, the disease can spread quickly from tree to tree. So I think the thinking is that if there's more diversity, then there's more resilience.
And with more resilience, there's...
more partying.
More partying.
So sakura forecasters are finding it increasingly difficult to peg down when people can plan their hanami drinking parties under a proper blanket of pink blossoms. And as it turns out, those parties are big for business. My colleague Jason Jenkins spoke to reporter Kathleen Benoza about the financial boost sakura season provides for beer companies, clothing manufacturers, and places like Starbucks.
Welcome, Kathleen.
Hey, Jason. Happy to be here.
Last week, you wrote a piece called Japan's Economy to Bloom as Hanami Season Kicks Off. And Hanami being the Japanese word for blossom viewing, sort of a shorthand for the drinking parties and picnics that people have under the blossoming trees. And your article focused on how Hanami season generates so much money around the country. What kind of money are we talking about here?
Well, for the piece, I talked to Katsuhiro Miyamoto.
Hi, Miyamoto desu. Yoroshiku onegai.
He's a professor emeritus at Kansai University, and he has put out figures on how the cherry blossom season affects the Japanese economy.
Ah, so he must be a Hanami fan himself.
Oh yeah, big time. He was thrilled to talk about it, actually. And just for Hanami season, he reported that it had a positive economic impact of around 200.6 billion yen.
Okay, so that's about 1.5 billion U.S. dollars at the time of recording, I think.
Oh yeah, but we gotta remember, last year, Hanami wasn't really a thing because of COVID. And his estimates this year, they're triple that, over 600 billion yen, now that the pandemic has calmed down a bit. But he still says that that's not as much as pre-pandemic levels.
So help me unpack these billions. Where is this money going and who's benefiting?
Well, it's mostly going to the tourism industry, but we really have to consider pre-pandemic levels here. This year, they're predicting about a total of 2.3 million foreign tourists during Hanami season. But before COVID, we had around that many people coming from China and South Korea alone.
Right. And that doesn't even count the domestic tourists who travel to different parts of the country. I mean, the locals are the biggest Hanami fans themselves, aren't they? And now that COVID's been downgraded, a lot more people restart their picnics and Hanami parties.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So you can kind of imagine that the tourism-related industries, they'd be doing really well with tourists and locals. But, you know, I found it really interesting that in Miyamoto's 2022 study, that 57% of respondents said they didn't even want to drink or eat at their picnics. And only 11% said they wanted to drink alcohol.
Does this have to do with the pandemic or mask wearing or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Professor Miyamoto actually talked to me about how people felt like this strong form of social pressure to just wear the masks and follow all these different pandemic-related guidelines. And people were also told not to drink or eat under the trees and to refrain from, like, stopping under the trees.
So what other sectors of the economy benefit from the cherry blossom season?
Well, a lot of brand names try to leverage their sales with the cherry blossom season.
Ah, of course. I know the pink Kit Kats well.
Yeah, and have you seen those Starbucks limited edition Frappuccinos?
Oh, yeah.
They're everywhere, and it's really popular here in Japan. Coca-Cola and Asahi even changed their packaging to include pink flowers, mm-hmm. the sakura petals, and companies big and small, they try to get in on the action by staging these sales and special seasonal discounts.
Oh, right. Yeah. Something similar happens in the West, in Canada, in the States, and I'm sure elsewhere. I guess here in Japan, it's, you know, spring and hanami season.
Yeah, you get it. But you grew up in the U.S., right, Jason?
I did.
When did the school year begin for you there?
Usually in September, in the fall, usually.
Okay, that's completely different here in Japan. Since here, the school year begins and ends in spring. So it begins in April and then ends in March. So the cherry blossoms have really come to symbolize new beginnings like that.
Of course. And so people are buying school supplies and they're buying new clothes and...
Oh, yeah. And it's not just schools. The end of the financial year is around springtime. So that's when people start new jobs. They go into new companies and companies transfer their employees to different places in Japan. So people are moving around as well.
Ah, so more clothes sold, more moving companies and furniture and appliances and suits for work.
You get the idea. This is all part of what's called shinseikatsu here in Japan.
Oh, yeah. Tell us a little more about shinseikatsu.
Shinseikatsu basically translates to new lifestyle. And like Professor Miyamoto says, hanami season coincides with major life decisions among Japanese people.
Ah, which is also a time when you buy lots of new stuff. And we've talked about moving and clothes and school supplies, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't a spike in photo equipment as well.
Oh, you're talking about all those people in the parks waiting to capture like this one branch for cherry blossom trees?
That's right. Every park has to have at least a half a dozen middle-aged men with a $1,000 camera lens to get their best shot of the hanami.
Oh, yeah. But you know, another industry that usually does well during this season are meetups and matchmaking services.
Matchmaking services?
Well, no, they're not really matchmaking services in like the old school sense, but they're parties for singles, like social gatherings during hanami season. And I also spoke to this meetup organizer, and he said that despite all these online dating apps, people still want to get to know each other in person. And hanami is the perfect season to do it.
Oh, that's so sweet. So romance really is in the air.
And billions and billions of yen.
There is a season of the year in which every country puts on its most beautiful raiment. In Japan, it is in cherry blossom time. This particular season has a vital effect upon the native people, who bask in the beauties of spring as they walk through the numerous parks where the cherry trees bloom in luxuriant profusion.
In an interview with the Japan Times 20 Questions section, dendrologist Toshio Katsuki, dendrology being the study of trees, points out that China actually has more cherry blossom species than Japan, but that Japan has its own cultural interpretations of them. For our final segment today, Jason Tu and Alyssa are back discussing the cultural significance of the sakura, and, more importantly, how you can get in on some hanami action yourself.
There's a poem that I learned about in Japanese class that I think about a lot from the 9th century by a waka poet, Ariwara no Narihira. I'm not going to butcher the poem, but the rough translation is, if there were no cherry blossoms in this world, my spring heart would be calm. And I think about that a lot because I just think it's a very stressful time of year. There's so much pressure to enjoy this like very, very, very fleeting beauty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. Expectations are high. It also usually rains around this time.
Right.
So when you actually do get a moment to enjoy the flowers, you know, it's sort of like a stolen moment almost.
Yeah,
I think of it as... The Olympics of FOMO.
Olympics of FOMO? What do you mean?
It's just like a world championship of catching it at the right exact moment. And if you don't, you have to wait another year.
And you'll even find in, you know, I mean, button-down corporate Japan, you'll find people popping out for cocktails under the trees at lunchtime, if that's the day that the weather is good. And you have to take advantage of it while it's happening. And I also wanted to mention how sakura trees have been used for diplomatic purposes as well. Alyssa, tell us what happened in 1912.
Right. So this is just over 100 years ago. In 1912, the mayor of Tokyo gifted sakura trees to Washington, D.C. And now they've become this iconic part of the U.S. Capitol.
Yeah, some people have called this sakura diplomacy. And I think the biggest example is Washington, D.C., but you would find other examples of this in other places, China, the U.K., and elsewhere.
That was actually my first experience of sakura. I haven't lived in Japan that long. I haven't actually lived through a proper hanami season in Japan yet. But when I was a kid, my parents were super into it, and my dad would, you know, check the paper every day. And then if it was the time, we would jump in the car on Friday afternoon, go down to DC and spend the weekend there, you know, in the 90s, taking pictures of us with the sakura. What about you, Alyssa?
Well, for me, I grew up in Tokyo. So every spring, I'd go to Arisugawa Park after school with my friends, and we'd picnic there. And now as an adult, I make it a point to throw a big party in Yoyogi Park. And I like to bring friends from different social circles together. And I'll, you know, see who gets along, what clicks. It's really fun.
Ruh-roh.
What about you, Jason?
It's probably pretty clear that I am a Hanami fan and have been for quite a while. It started for me in 2001. I was the lowest ranking, newest employee in a company. And for the corporate Hanami party, they wanted to get someone to go save space, you know, to get up really early and, you know, put out some tarps to save a spot for everybody to come to after work. They usually pick the lowest rung, and that was me.
Yeah, it's pretty normal at Japanese companies to get the newbies to go out there early in the morning and save spots for everyone. Like light hazing.
Light pink hazing.
Yep, I was that newbie. But the funny thing was, I loved it. I got into it. I'm not a morning person at all, but after that first year, I volunteered to do it the next year and the year after that. And when I left the company, I started throwing Hanami parties of my own. It just became the best week of the year for me.
You know, one of the highlights of the Hanami season for me is the community aspect of it. So let's talk about the Hanami itself and what a typical Hanami party looks like.
Well, I guess the stereotypical Hanami party is just a glorified picnic, really. You know, people put out some food and drink and sit under the trees and eat, drink, enjoy each other's company. But I know a lot of people enjoy Hanami season simply by walking on paths that are lined with sakura trees. I like that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the walking type of Hanami, especially at night in Tokyo. There are a lot of places where the trees are lit up with lanterns. It's really beautiful.
So there must be some places that are better than others. Where do you guys like to go?
Yeah, we should get into some Hanami spot recommendations. But I do think it's worth mentioning that, you know, out of the major Hanami spots, those, you know, in big cities anyway, they tend to each have their own sort of unique atmosphere. How would I put it? This isn't the best analogy, but think of it like dining or nightlife. There may be a dozen different cafes or bars or restaurants or nightclubs, but a lot of them will attract a certain kind of clientele, or they have a certain mood or vibe to the ambiance, as it were. You know, I think Hanami spots can be like that sometimes.
Mm, yeah, for sure.
Interesting.
Some of them feel like someone's backyard. Another one feels like a crazy music festival, or another one feels like sort of a manicured garden. But Alyssa, why don't you start us off in Tokyo? You're in the capital. Tell us where to go.
Sure. So two of the most popular Hanami spots in Tokyo, I'd say, are Ueno Park and also Yoyogi Park. You know, both of these places, they draw huge crowds. And so there's, you know, competition going on for prime locations underneath the sakura trees. But there's definitely like a party aspect to it as well. You know, people are jumping from party to party and meeting up with friends that maybe they didn't expect to see. So that's, you know, a positive aspect of going to these more popular crowded locations. There's also Inokashira Park out by Kichijoji. If you're looking for something a little more subdued, I'd recommend Shinjuku Gyoen. You do have to pay to get in. They also close early, I think, maybe around like 4 or 5 p.m. And I think they don't allow you to bring alcohol. So, you know, it's a little more tame.
But civilized?
Civilized, yeah, that might be the right word. But if you're, you know, if you're wanting to go to really bask in the beauty of the sakura trees, I think Shinjuku Gyoen is the right
yes.
place to go.
Another good thing about Shinjuku Gyoen is that they have some of the sakura species that bloom later than the Someyoshino variety. They're called Yaezakura trees, and Shinjuku Gyoen has some of those. So if you miss the first round of blooming, you can possibly hit this spot later.
Mm-hmm. Good tip.
Okay, so you've listed up some of the sit-down picnic-type Hanami spots. Give us a couple of the walking options.
Well, my favorite spot for just, you know, a night walk is along the river in Nakameguro. They light up lanterns along the way, and sometimes they have stalls where you can buy drinks and stuff like that. So there's kind of like a summer festival vibe going on as well. There's also the perimeter of the moat around the Imperial Palace. There's also the Aoyama Cemetery and the Yanaka area near Nippori Station. those two places are also great for a stroll.
Oh, wait, I want to go there.
Yeah, I love the Yanaka area as well.
Mm-hmm. What about Kansai?
In Kansai, yeah, there are definitely a wealth of options here. In Osaka, one of my favorite spots is Kema Sakura no Miya Park. It's along the river, and there are hundreds of trees. And then if you walk about 20 minutes south on the west side of the river, there's the Mint Bureau and the Mint Museum. Now, this doesn't sound like a place you would see lots of sakura trees. And in truth, they only have like 300, I think. But they have over 100 different species. One challenge for this is you have to reserve ahead of time. That's one of the reasons I haven't seen it yet, but I'm planning to go this year. Now, in Kyoto, obviously, one of the most popular spots is Maruyama Koen, or Maruyama Park. It's in the Yasaka Shrine Complex, and it's a great spot for some dinner or a snack. There's lots of stalls and tables set up, but I've heard the Kyoto Botanical Gardens are quite good as well. My favorite in Kyoto is probably walking the Philosopher's Path. That's a walkthrough type. But, you know, it's been 3 years with no hanami, so I bet it's going to be crowded, so I may skip it this year. Now, if I had a hanami bucket list, I would definitely go to Mount Yoshino in Nara at some point. This is an entire mountain covered in sakura trees. I think it's like 30,000 and, you know, hundreds of different species. This is the kind of place that you would, you know, read in ancient poems or see in ancient paintings. But I do know in Nara that a lot of people like to go to Nara Park where the deer are. But I would like to warn you that if you try to do a picnic here, you will have some uninvited four-legged guests and they will take your food.
Any tips for a newbie?
Right. I think after years of experience, I have a lot of pro tips.
Teach me.
So, you know, along with your typical picnic supplies like food, drinks, and some kind of something to cover the ground like a tarp or a blanket, I think you should make sure to pack extra napkins because they're definitely going to be spills.
Napkins? We bring towels because there's always some big spills. I mean, not huge towels, but you know the little hand towels you get for sports and at hot springs and places like that? You know, because this is Japan, you know, people are taking their shoes off to step onto your ground cloth or your tarp or whatever. And so if there's a lot of spills, you get, you know, wet, sticky socks. That's no fun.
Mm-mm, not fun at all. Also, remember to pack a small speaker for some tunes.
I've heard people bring full-on karaoke machines. Is that true?
Oh, yeah.
I have seen that, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I also, another pro tip, I try to find a location that's somewhat close to the public bathroom. Definitely not right beside, but near enough that you can walk there drunkenly and make your way back to your
yeah,
friends.
That's a good one.
It's going to be an issue for me.
You should expect lines. All of these tips are important to keep in mind, but I think the most important thing to remember is to keep these hanami parties fairly casual. You know, you don't need a set start time, a set end time. People are going to be coming and going, jumping from, you know, one party to the next to talk to friends or just meet new people. So, you know, to keep it sort of lighthearted and open is the way to go.
And with that, it's time for us to wrap up. See you under the trees.
Let's do it.
See you there.
There you have it, some excellent tips for your own hanami. I'm now with Deep Dive producer Dave Cortez. How's the weather in Tokyo looking this week?
Well, Sean, there's rain in the forecast for a few days, but hopefully things clear up by the weekend.
I meant it at the top when I said timing was everything when it comes to cherry blossoms.
Right.
If you're flying in from overseas for them, sometimes it can be the biggest gamble as to whether or not you're going to actually see the country in its full sakura splendor. And if you do, well, let's just say your socials will be blowing up with blossoms for weeks.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're not coming from overseas, I think people living here can relate to the idea of trying to get that hanami party on the weekend and then the forecast is rainy. So yeah, we're all gambling.
It's truly a wonderful time.
As was, Sean, our trip to Okinawa. We went to the Okinawa Institute of Science and Technology to interview some of their scientists. Everyone was extremely hospitable, and we look forward to bringing you some stories from the South in the future.
Look, before we go, I also just wanted to mention that there have been some really good stories at japantimes.co.jp. Jason Koskri, our sports writer, went from writing about Shohei Ohtani's marriage to a betting scandal involving his interpreter. Our new reporter, Francis Tang, wrote about the prevalence of a new buzzword, Moshitora. Dave, can you guess what that means?
I actually know what that means.
Okay.
It means, what if Trump? And in some parts, it's actually evolved to the word hobotora, which means it's pretty certain that it's going to be Trump, guys. Right. So it's not a literal translation, but yeah, that's happening out there.
Yeah, check out Francis's piece, Jason's coverage, and a slew of timely cherry blossom-related language pieces and recipes at the Japan Times Online. We will continue to be on a bit of a break over the next few weeks, but I'd like to encourage everyone to take a look at our back catalog of deep dive episodes if you haven't checked them out yet. Or, hey, just get out and enjoy the weather before we head into another sweltering hot summer. Deep Dive is produced by Dave here. Our outgoing song is by Oscar Boyd, and our theme music is by the Japanese musician 4L. I'm Sean McKenna. Hotsukare-sama.